I have no idea where this is. Oh, yeah, I guess it, I think it is. I'll let you check it out. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since January 17, 1981, and for that I'm very grateful to God. God I found through Alcoholics Anonymous, but I actually suspect he probably found me. I probably wasn't misplaced, actually. He probably knew where I was all along, you know. The God of my understanding, you know, the big book, I found it through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says being all powerful. So I guess an all powerful God probably doesn't lose track of his children, so he probably knew where. He was just letting me do my thing because I was rebellious. I was disobedient. And so he let me do my deal. You know, he just let me off the leash. It's hard for, boy, you got to have a tremendous amount of love and faith to let a child off the leash. You know, I've been sober 27 years and married for that long. My sponsor told me, he said, don't make any major decisions in your first year. So when I was 3 months sober, I got married. I didn't think it was a major deal. But I still think it was probably a good thing because it prevented me from being actually single in Alcoholics Anonymous. Instead of learning how to be single in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to learn how to be married in Alcoholics Anonymous. Whole different deal. But it really is good to be here. I'm going to talk, I'm going to try to follow the script, although I don't know, I'll probably wander off the reservation a little bit. I'll do the best I can. I'm going to read a lot. We're going to talk about the steps, and I'm going to somewhere hover around them middle steps. You know, they say 5 through 8 instead of, well, I didn't really cover 4, so maybe 4 through 9. It's going to be close enough for government work. You know what I mean? It's just an AA meeting. Nobody's going to drink. Nobody needs to get upset about anything. I'm going to read a lot from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That way, no matter what I say, you'll actually get something out of this. You understand? Because this is pure AA, and I want to stay close to the script. The longer I'm sober, the more I am absolutely convinced that the answers are in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I've got to tell you something. I have a little bit of it. I've got to tell you, I'm really a nice guy. I think. I don't know. Don't talk to my sponsees about that. But I do have a little bit of an edge to me. You know, I am a little controversial. I try to control myself, but I always manage to escape and say something or do something to piss somebody off. I actually hope that happens today because it's been my experience that the only time I ever learned anything was from people that pissed me off. It sort of seems that in a fellowship where you have to develop new ideas and get rid of old ideas, that somewhere along the way, if you're really going to grow in this thing, you're going to be confronted by somebody who's going to tell you something that you don't want to hear. It'd be sort of like a shame if that only happened in the first few months or the first year. It's sort of, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that, you know, probably the biggest problem with growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous is when we stop growing up. You know, because what it says in the sixth step, see, I jump around. This is going to be like Pulp Fiction. Anybody ever see Pulp Fiction? You know, they start in the middle, it goes to the end. You're going to have to do a little work in following this one up. They say in the sixth step, they say what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is we want to settle. We want to settle for only as much sobriety that'll keep us comfortable. So we just sort of say, well, I'm not drinking. I'm making a few bucks. I got a wife. I'm this. You know, get off my back. I'm okay. We don't want to shoot for perfection. And that perfection is the perfection of God. We don't want to do that deal. As a matter of fact, we sort of don't like people that talk to us about that stuff, you know? And I want to talk to you a little bit about growing up and emotional sobriety, which is something I really like to talk about. I'm going to read something from AA. What I like to do is talk about the big book, read the big book, and then I want to tell you some personal experiences. I think experiences are very important. Some true stories. I think I told this, it's not so much a joke, but it's a little something my sponsor used to say. He used to say, Russell, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. And, you know, we're alcoholics, so a guy with one day has an opinion about something, you know. And I had a lot of, you know, I used to be of the opinion that I needed to drink in order to live. Anybody ever had that opinion? You know, when you have that opinion, you say you can't envision life without drinking, everybody drinks and all. That used to be my opinion. One day I had that opinion, that I would never be able to stop stop drinking. You know, that I would never be able to stop drinking, and that I couldn't envision a life without drinking. And the next day, I was of the opinion that I could live life without drinking. It happened like in one day. I went from one side to, you know, it says ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are the driving force of these men's lives, are suddenly cast to one side, and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, attitudes. When I was very young, I read a book called The Magus, and there was a quote by T.S. Eliot, and it said, we will not cease our exploration. In the end, when we're done with all our exploring, we'll come back to the place we began, having known the place for the first time. You know, I'm 59 years old. I've been sober 27 years. I can't talk like I have 27 days. I really can't. I can't be like I had 27 days or 27 months or 27 weeks. I can't be like I'm 24 or 30 years old. I can only be 15. I can only be what I am right now. You know, the only thing I pray for, besides to glorify God, you know, and to give Him the gift of what I've received, the only thing I pray for is that I'm honest. And that I just pull the stuff that I talk about things that I just don't want to be an entertainer. And there's nothing wrong with entertaining. I think it's great when we laugh and everything like that, but I don't want to do what I've done all my life, and that is worry what people think about me, and therefore sort of water down the message. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of, you know, talk from my heart about my life and, you know, how this thing has worked for me. And, you know, Bill Wilson said ideas, emotions, and attitudes and behavior that are quite appropriate for a teenager of 17, 18, 19 years old is totally inappropriate for a man of 40, 50, or 60 years old. And I sponsor a lot of men. And I sponsor a lot of men because they ask me, and I say yes, and I'm available. A guy named Johnny Harris, many men, 23 years ago, told me when I asked him for his telephone number, he said, and I was sure, he said, I said, because I was sure it's unlisted, he said, my number's not unlisted, you can find it in the book. I said, your number's not unlisted? He says, Russell, I don't know what fellowship you're in. Seems everybody who ever talked to me, all my mentors, whenever they talked to me, they always gave me a shot first. I'm just like one of those know-it-all guys that in order for me to get something, I gotta get slapped first. I'm not saying everybody's like that. You know, A's like a giant toolbox, right? There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, and I'm not, I may not be your wrench, but I'm just one of those guys that whenever I learn something, they always hit me first in the solar plexus. They always give me a little nudge, a little sarcasm. I'm just one of those alcoholics. I just sort of like, I got it first by being slapped down, by being humbleized or something. Well, they say that in the 12 and 12, right? How we get a new perspective, 100, what was it, 100 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. So, you know, these are the things I want to talk about, and I want to read, I'll start off by reading something, but, you know, I think growing up in AA is an interesting thing. What's it saying, the 12 and 12, and lesson until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness he'll find none at all. And then later on in the big book, you know, it talks about why people drink. It says here and every once in a while, a young guy says, feel better, look better, having a better time. You know, I'm working better. He says, we laugh at such salary. We always think they're talking about somebody who's got like 3 months or 4 months or something. Feel better, look better, having a better time. We laugh at such salary. We know that he will soon try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll be at the jumping off. You know, that sort of, that mindset. Feel better, look better, having a better time. Don't worry about me. I've got it all under control. I'm self-reliant. That sort of mindset works perfectly well for somebody who has 14 years or 20 years. Because it bespeaks a certain sort of attitude about who you are, what you are, who you depend upon, and what your relation is with God. Relationship with is God. And if there's one word I want anybody to remember through this entire series, if there's only one word, the word I want you to remember is relationship. You know, listen, I have my opinion about things. I could be wrong. I want to just tell you something. Of course, I don't think so. I'm going to do the best I can to tell you what I believe, okay? Next year, when you have a cruise and Snow asks you to do this deal, you tell them what you believe, you know? And I believe this whole program is about developing a relationship with God and then finally get into the 11th step. And then the only thing you have to do in the 11th step is get more faith and more relationship. And then in the 12th step, you know what we do? We tell other people about that. That's what we tell the people. It's all about a relationship. And you know why I believe that? Because that's what my big book says. I think what happens is, like human beings, you know, I'm a lawyer, and I've read a lot, and I've studied a lot, and all this sort of stuff. I think as human beings, and you know, you can be very lazy on this stuff. I'm a lazy guy. I mean, I'm lazy. You know, I'm a slothful. You know, if I can get by doing little work or get by doing a lot of work, I'm going to do the little work. You know, I'm the guy who studies like the last minute and all that sort of stuff. I think what happens is AA, who gets sober pretty easily, and we get the monkey off our back pretty fast, and good things start happening to us. And then, you know, there's a lot of people that we hear different things in AA, good things, not bad things, you know, acceptance is the answer to all our problems, good orderly direction, you know, different little crib words. And we develop this language, this lingo, this vocabulary that's AA, so that we can get by in any meeting anywhere in the United States, and they'll know we're in Alcoholics Anonymous because we'll say the words, you know, turning it over and stuff like that. And we get to a point where we know enough words, we know enough language, and we've read the book fast enough and everything like that, we pretty feel pretty comfortable where we're at. We're picking up those medallions, and we actually think we're working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're not even close. Because it's a big book, it's not a small book. And we're working off the small book. And we're not seeing the things, the tough things. Because, you know, the tough things are easy to avoid. I read, I think, the last time I was here, one of the invisible lines that nobody ever talks about in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of invisible lines. There's a lot of, and the people don't talk because it's like my alcoholic theory, which I think is really part of the big book, where it talks about our delusional thinking, right? Alcoholic is delusional. He's a liar, though he usually doesn't think so. You know, and I have an alcoholic theory that whenever an alcoholic hears something he doesn't like, or is told something he doesn't like, or reads something he doesn't like, it confuses him. So he ignores it. So there's a lot of stuff about God and how we're supposed to act and what we're supposed to do and what's supposed to happen that's in the big book that we sort of slough over and say, well, that's your program, but it's not my program. But it's not my program, and it's not your program, it's their program. There's not a my, I mean, there's all sorts of different programs. And the way I see the big book, and I'm saying nobody does it in lockstep exactly the same, but essentially the big book is the big book. It's what it is. It's our basic text. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. Who's thoroughly followed our path. So I think it's a good idea to know what their path is. We have an interesting fellowship here. You know, I'm going to say some things that are going to set people on edge, but that's okay, because one of the best things you can do, one of the best things I can do for anybody is piss people off. You know, once you got them pissed, first of all, when you piss people off, it tells you a lot about them. When somebody gets angry or gets upset in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't care how long they're sober, it tells you a lot about them. And if they're sober and they want to stay sober, they'll sort of think about that, and maybe they'll learn something about themselves. And maybe I know my growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous is all about older members of Alcoholics Anonymous pissing me off and me getting mad and saying stuff to me that they should have never said to me, and my having to deal with that. Because you know how alcoholics are. Somebody pisses you off, you live with that for like 10 years. You know, and it gets horrible, and you're thinking about them. They're living rent-free in your head, and they don't even care. They've moved on, you know? And you know why alcoholics say things to piss you off? Why alcoholics say things to piss you? Because they love you. Because they don't want to lie. So they just tell you the truth, and they say something, and it drives you crazy because it's so unfair, you know? Okay, this is from page 266. I promised Susan I would mention the page. 266. These last 18 years, and this is from the story. He sold himself short. I want to start off with this because I want to start off at a certain place. You know, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to read a lot of stuff from this book. I'm hoping you'll see a pattern. I'm hoping you see. I like to deal with stuff like they say, like, the great fact is this and nothing less. You know what I mean? I like to deal with, like, the stuff where there's no beating around the bush. They mean what they say. We never apologize for, I mean, where they're serious. You know what I mean? I like to deal with that stuff, you know? These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills, and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. Now, here we go. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. You ever go to AA meetings where they're talking about stuff? What's that, like about every AA meeting you ever go to? You ever go to AA meeting where they talk about people?
Yeah.
Ever been to AA meeting where the discussion is about people? My mother, my father, my son, my daughter. You ever hear that? You ever go to meetings where they're talking about stuff and people? You know what the big book says about that? I'm just talking about the big book. I mean, forget about me. As a matter of fact, I don't even want you to listen to me because I don't really have, you know, I'll get it all wrong. You know, the big book talks about that, you know, when it's dealing with newcomers. It says an interesting thing. Let me try to find it while I interrupt myself. I do stuff like this, and the real trick is to see whether I ever get back. It's sort of like dramatic. This is what the big book says about that and working with others. It says, I can find working with others here. I know it's right here. Here it is. It says, this is what it says. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back. For one reason or another, remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. You know, Bill Wilson said that after we get rid of the drinking, it's all about unhealthy dependencies. And this says it's not dependent upon people. You know what it's dependent upon? It is dependent upon your relationship with God. How many AA meetings do you go to where they're talking about people? How many AA meetings do you go to where they talk about things or stuff? How many AA meetings do you go to where they talk about and they just focus on your relationship with God? What happens in an AA meeting when he starts bringing up God or the Bible or religion? How many people do you, AA meetings do you go to where they talk about organized religion? How many people AA meetings do you go to where people are putting down organized religion? Do you know in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous it says we don't do that? It says, this is what it says. I mean, I'm just talking about if you're going to work actually the program of Alcoholics Anonymous instead of pandering to your next door neighbor because you're worried about you're thinking about it. If you work in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says we begin to see, he says we lose intolerance, even of organized religion. He said we begin to see where they're right. They've developed a way of living that's better than our way of living. The only chapter that's written to the non-believers is chapter of the agnostics, and that chapter says this sort of feeling, this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. You need to get over it. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God. The greatest thing accorded to any... Well, of course, this doesn't count because it's not in the first 164 pages. But, you know, I'm thinking maybe there's a pattern here. Maybe it isn't so far from what's in the first 164 pages. Maybe the first 164 pages is all about him. You know, he's the one who's going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. We soon see that he is doing for us what we could not do for himself. Maybe this really is about him. Maybe it's not about me. Above all, I've gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. I was so happy to be here to hear Angie talk, give her a message. Of course, the only thing I heard that Angie said was she talked about how she was lost and she was found. She talked about him. That's the only thing I heard, but I know you guys heard a lot of other stuff. It was funny and it was tearful and it was wonderful, but I just heard about, that's all I heard about. Because that's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. That's what every step is about in here. Every single step is designed to push you towards him and take away the obstacles that blocks out the sunshine of the spirit. It's not about psychological stuff, right? That's, you did the psychiatrist thing. You did all that stuff. Didn't work, by the way. You know? It didn't work. Yeah. At least it didn't work for me. So I was at a meeting when I was 3 months sober. I'll tell you a couple stories before I launch into this. I was at a meeting when I was 3 months sober, and two months sober, and some guy got up, and I think Ray mentioned this the other day, this part of the, and he got up and he said, "My name's Joe, and I'm a recovered alcoholic." And, you know, I've been an alcoholic 3 months, so I pretty much knew the deal. I knew that you never cured. I know that we're recovering alcoholics, because everybody in AA was saying, "I'm a recovering alcoholic." Everybody I had heard said, "I'm a recovering alcoholic." As a matter of fact, to this day, everybody says they're a recovering alcoholic. So this guy said something different. So I immediately disliked him, you know. No, because I knew, being an alcoholic and being sharp, that number one, he was wrong. I knew he wasn't recovered because you couldn't be cured. And the way I took it, and maybe you'll understand this, because I know that most alcoholics, you know, I say things like most alcoholics. I know that you're probably the exception. I know if you're in the audience and you're saying, "Well, that's not me," you're probably the exception to the rule. But most of the alcoholics, you know, in the 27 years I've been around, I know most alcoholics suffer from self-esteem issues. So I know whenever I'm talking to a group, this is like 15% of groups saying, "Who the hell does he think he is?" I'm already starting off in the valley, working my way up, because I know we're a defiant lot, and you know most people are like open-minded. You know, you walk in these talking to me, says, "Well, maybe this guy has something to say." And I know when you're with alcoholics, you got like 15 to 27 people say, "Screw this guy." You know what I mean? I don't even like him. I don't even like the way. I don't even like his shirt. Who does he think he is? He thinks he's better than me. I should be up there telling him what to do. I got so many years. I know I'm already starting up off behind the eight ball, because that's the nature of the deal. You understand what I'm saying? Then I accept that thing. That's okay. So I'm sitting there with this guy, and he says, "I'm a recovered alcoholic." And you know, what I'm thinking is, he's saying he's cured. He's saying he's better than me. I'm recovering. I'm trying to struggle with this thing. What, he's so good? And so, and all I'm thinking throughout the entire meeting is, you know, look at this son of a gun. He's telling the wrong information. He's saying he's recovered. There are new people here. They're going to go the wrong way. They're going to think it's a cure. Somebody ought to call New York, you know, blah, blah. You know, I'll rape his mother, kill his wife, you know, and burn him in effigy. You know, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But I mean, I was, I didn't have to go outside to get out. I didn't have to go to AA, you know, and tell them about my resentments. I got resentments at the meeting. You know what I mean? There's no question about that. You know, if you were talking, I was resenting you. So after the meeting, I went up to my sponsor. He said, "Well, how was the talker?" I mean, the speaker. He said, "Well, he was terrible. He was horrible." He says, "You know what he said? He said he was a recovered alcoholic." And my sponsor says, "Well, you are." "So what do you mean I am?" He says, "You're a recovered alcoholic. You've recovered." He says, "What do you mean I recovered?" He says, "Have you read the big book?" Now, of course, I had read it. You know what that means, you know. I'd read it like we all read it, which means I maybe grasped like 1% of it, you know. He said, "Look at the foreword. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body." You ever have this deal where, you know, you wake up in the morning and say, "I'm not going to drink today," and then by 4 o'clock in the afternoon you're drinking? And so you wake up the next morning and say, "Well, I'm not going to go to the bar today," and by 4 o'clock in the afternoon you're in the bar. You woke up the next day, "Well, I'm not going to buy booze today," and by 4 o'clock in the afternoon you're scraping for dimes, nickels, and quarters in order to get up $2.89 so you can get down to the Winn-Dixie and buy a gallon bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti. And you say, "I'm not going to," and you do it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until you finally say, "Well, I'm going to die drunk. I ain't never going to be able to stop drinking because I can't stop drinking." And you wish you were dead. You wish you were dead, but you're scared of dying. You ever do that deal? It's like I want to be dead. I want to wake up dead, but it's the stop and breathing part that bothers me. You know what I mean? And you know, yeah, that's a. And here's, and so my sponsor said to me, he said "You've recovered. You know, everybody in here has recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. I know what that hopeless state of mind and body is when you can't stop drinking. Hey, listen, I don't care. Everybody in AA has recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. Every single person has recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. Listen, I don't care whether you're worried about your romance. I don't care if you're worried about your finances. I don't care if you're sucking your thumb. I don't care if you're full of self-pity. It ain't nothing compared to the "I can't stop drinking" deal. That's a hopeless state of mind and body. After you get through helpless state of mind and body, you just get pitiful. There's a difference between pitiful or pathetic or thumb-sucking crybaby and hopeless state. I know what a hopeless state of mind and body sounds like. It sounds like, "I need a drink." And then I get one, and I can't stop. And everybody I know now, I've recovered from that. You know, I may have all sorts of crazy problems, but I'll tell you, you know, the God of my understanding has recovered me from that hopeless state of mind and body. Boy, just imagine how much I'd have to tell you if I had actually listened to the rest of that guy's story. Because I tuned him out 5 seconds after he said that, and I didn't hear another word he said because I was pissed off, because I didn't like what he said. That's what stops alcoholics from getting information, because we're so undisciplined in our mind, we're so full of hate and sickness and bile, that if somebody just says one thing, it gets us off on some rabbit trail. We're lucky that anybody stays sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So in any event, I'm down at the doing the steps when I was about 3 years sober down at the Homestead Group, and what I'm trying to share with you now is some aspects of this thing I've learned over the years till I launch into my expose of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm down at the Homestead Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm doing the fourth step. And I was about 3 years sober, and I started doing the steps at that time, and it was a group sort of like this, and I'm pontificating or doing whatever I'm doing. I'm trying to do the best job I can. This was before I realized what the 12th step was all about. See, I thought what the 12th step said was that we carried the message, and that's not what it says at all. And when you think the 12th step is about carrying the message, you can get into all sorts of trouble, and it's a real scary deal. I really thought that's what the 12th step was about carrying the message. And, you know, if you got to carry the message, then you got to carry the message. That means you got to like me tonight. I got to be good. You can't drink afterwards, or else it's my fault. And I got to say, you know, it's a bad deal. I didn't realize there was a word "we try" in there. I didn't realize about the try, because I thought it was up to me. I thought I had something to do with it. You know, you can understand why that happens. I'm here, you're there, I'm talking. So I actually think that what I say makes any difference whatsoever, when it's all a God thing anyway. But I didn't know that until I experienced the deal. Because until you go through the experiences of life, it doesn't make any sense, because it's not, there's no application to it. It's just theory. You know, and so what happens is if you really think that you have to carry the message, then you get nervous before meetings. What am I going to say, and all that sort of stuff, because you think it's really important. And you see, when the deal is, all I have to do is do the best job I can do tonight. So I did a horrible four-step meeting. It was horrible. It was the worst four-step meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know it was, because nobody laughed and nobody was looking and nobody was employed. I knew it was terrible. I knew it was horrible. And, you know, I wasn't carrying the message and they weren't getting it. And, you know, I left and I boogied out of there. And, you know, in Florida, I know this is different in other places, but in Florida we have step speakers. And we have people that do step meetings. They go, you commit, it's a commitment. You commit for 12 weeks, you come and you do step one, step two, step three, and I do that, you know, except I'm like all over that. I do step 12 when I'm supposed to be doing step one, and you're probably getting the picture at this deal, you know, saying, what's he talking about? But this is sort of like what, but somehow in the end of the 12 steps, I managed to cover all of them. As a matter of fact, the truth is, if you know anything about the steps, I used to do them in very discreet, sort of like, this is step one, and this is step two, and this is step three. But I got to tell you something, the older I get in AA, I know we got a lot of old timers in here. Does it ever get seen this way to you, that but after you got a few years, it used to be, oh, you know, you say things like, oh, I just did a step 10. Oh, I did. Well, that's a step 4. Oh, I just did a step 3. Oh, that must be a step 8. But, you know, the older you get, it's become such a part of the whole thing gets sort of like mushed up. And it's like you don't even know what it's step. It's just like you're living life and you're doing stuff, and, you know, you can't go from your bed to the toilet without doing all 12 of them. You know what I mean? It's just the way you live your life and how you operate and how you think and what you do. And it could be step 8, but it could also be step 3. And it doesn't even make any... What was I talking about? So, in any event, so I left that place, and I said to myself, I said, I ain't going back there. They don't like me. Now, of course, I knew I was going back there because, you know, my sponsor used to say, whenever you make an excuse for not going to an AA meeting, you're thinking maybe it's okay to drink. And I knew I was going back because, you know, no matter how scared I was about doing anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was more scared to drink. And I bought into this crap, you know, that like you did this stuff or else you drank. I mean, I actually bought into this crap, that unless you got a sponsor, unless you did this stuff, unless you did this stuff. I'm not saying I did it perfectly, but I bought into the bullshit. I bought into the bullshit that if you didn't do this stuff, you might drink. And I was so scared of drinking, that's what kept me coming back. So, yeah, I was being pissed off and quitting AA every other day, but I didn't want to drink, you know. And, you know, I'll tell you, you can be dumb, you can be stupid, you can be crazy, you can be defiant. If you don't want to drink in a real bad way, that can save your ass in alcohol. It's amazing what not wanting to drink will do for you in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all you need. You don't need brains. You just need the I don't want to drink deal. And I just got to a point in a place God allowed me to get where I just didn't want to drink. So I was willing to be humiliated. I was willing to go back and say I'm sorry. I was willing to you know, plead guilty to stuff I wasn't guilty of. I was going to do anything just because I didn't want to, because anything was better than that. So I'm right away, I'm saying, but you know, it doesn't stop you from thinking, you know, which is a whole other deal. You want to stop that thinking stuff. That's a whole other deal. We'll talk about that in a second. But because that'll get you in trouble. That's an old idea that you got to think. Isn't that an old idea? You know, when they handled them and said, we got to stop playing God. You know, it says, here's the how and why, but we got to stop playing God. You know, the way we play God is we think. We think thinking is important. When I need to go to the bathroom, I go to the bathroom. When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. That's pretty much all I need to know. Everything else is I'm on a need-to-know basis. You know, I used to think, and solve a lot of problems. I didn't realize the scope of my powerlessness. You know how powerless you are. You know, it's all illusionary. You know, there's nobody in here who knows that they're even going to make it out of this room tonight alive. Really, I could go have a heart attack right now in front of you. I mean, I hope it doesn't happen, but it could happen like that. You know, just ask John Lennon or JFK or ask, you know, just ask the guy who was on the top floor of the World Trade Center, sipping a cup of coffee, thinking about his billions of dollars and how great things are going right before the first plane hit. You know, your life is held and it's like, you know, we plan and we connive and we try to control and we try to be self-sufficient and manage our own lives. And then all of a sudden something happens and knocks the crap out of us. And all of a sudden we realize how close we are to not having anything. Because it's all about him. Until you finally accept the exact precarious position you're in, that you have no control and you have no power and you have absolutely nothing. But I guess if you have faith that there's a loving God and he's going to protect you, you could live in that deal anyway. But it's got to be scary if you don't have that deal going on, right? But drinking will help that. So what was I talking about? So in any event, I was going from that homestead group, And I'm saying I'm not going back there. And, you know, they hated me. They didn't like me and everything. So, but, of course, I went back. So I go back the next week to do the fifth step. And I'm standing there. And before the meeting starts, some young guy comes up to me. And he said, can I talk to you for a second? I said, sure. He says, my name is Joe. I said, Joe, my name is Russell. He says, yeah. He says, I was here last week. He says, I just want to tell you, you saved my life. I said, I'm sorry, what? He says, you saved my life. I said, I was fixing on drinking, I was fixing on killing myself, I had been trying this thing, nothing made any sense, everything was screwed up, this was going to be the last AA meeting I went to, and I just went here, I don't even know why I went there, because I knew this thing wasn't going to work, and I was different, and I want to tell you something, I was sitting in the back of the row, you didn't see me, he says, but I want to tell you something, when you said the chicken was on the roof, everything came together for me. Now, here's the key. Now I'm like digging this, you know what I mean? Because, you know, if anybody's ever spoken to help people, you like when people say, you saved my life, you know, gives you purpose. But he says, I'm thinking to myself, I never said the chicken was on the roof. Now I knew what he was talking about because I was talking a little poultry there, you know what I mean? There was some poultry in the talk, but I had said, he got it all wrong. I had said the turkey was in the basement. He had mixed the whole thing up. But of course, at 3 years sober, I was like at least smart enough then not to conjure. I took credit for it. I said, oh yeah, chicken on the roof thing. Yeah, I'm always saying that stuff, you know what I mean? That's me, the old chicken on the roof guy, you know? But you see, that's the deal. You see, here I am doing the worst AA meeting I've ever done in my life. Just knowing it's the worst AA meeting, but doing the best job I could that night, right? And I say something. I say, turkey in the basement. And it floats across that room. There's some guy in the back of the room. He's dying. He hates AA. Nothing's working for him. And he walks into an AA room thinking, just with a molecule of hope, maybe this guy, maybe this meeting, maybe this deal. And he sits back there, and Turkey in the basement is floating across that deal. And it goes into his ears, Turkey on the basement. And God knows that the piece that's missing from this guy's heart is chicken on the roof. And God does what God does best and turns Turkey in the basement to chicken on the roof. He's healed, and I get the credit. You know, I guess Abby Thatcher, when he left Bill Wilson that day, still drinking, probably thought, boy, this was a waste of time. And everybody in here is sober because of that 12-step call. And by the way, that was when they didn't have the big book, when Abby was just reading the Bible. You know that Bible thing that everybody gets pissed off at when you quote it or talk about an AA? Because we're such AAers that we don't even know what this program's about. Because we're closed-minded and we're intolerant, and that's our nature. Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Interesting. Well, it ain't Well People's Anonymous, that's for sure. So there's a doctor. This is a true story. Then I'm going to get into the book. My final true story. This is a true story. That doesn't involve me, but it does involve me. It involves you. It involves everybody. It involves it's Alcoholics Anonymous. What the heck? So in Palm Beach County, about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, there was a doctor, and what he was doing is he was giving out chemotherapy medication. You know, the medication you give out for chemotherapy? What do you call chemotherapy medication? I actually had cancer, but I had the radiation treatment. What do they call that? Chemo drugs? What do you call them?
Yeah, chemo.
Chemo. Okay. Thank you for that, you know. And so he's and what happens is they didn't realize that he was watering down the drugs. And so hundreds of people were getting watered down. Now, apparently, the way chemo works is it'll work, but you've got to get a certain amount at a certain dosage over a certain period of time, and it'll work. If you don't get an exact kind of dosage, you die. So people were dying all over the place. And apparently he did this because the motivation was money. He was making money. I'm making a lot of money. And so people died. And so they indicted him for manslaughter, whatever the heck they indicted him for. And you know, I was thinking, I said, you see, that's the one thing I don't want to do. I don't want to hand you out the watered down stuff. You know, in AA, we don't do it for money. We hand out the watered down stuff because we want people to like us. Because, you know, part of the consequences when it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and true happiness he'll find none at all. Part of the consequences of being an alcoholic is that you're an acceptaholic. You will do anything to be accepted. That's why alcoholics say things like, what do I say if they ask me to have a drink? And they need to know, you know. My sponsor, I said to my sponsor, what do I say if they ask me to have a drink? He said, listen, Russell, this is what you say. You say, no, thank you. And I said, what do you mean? You know, I had to have a cover story. Because I would rather drink and kill myself and kill my wife and family than risk the fact that you might be displeased with me. And when you're dealing with a personality that will sell his life, prostitute himself, sell his kids, prostitute every single virtue he thinks he has, is the ultimate of hypocrites, just because the worst thing that could happen to him is some stranger may not like him. When you're dealing with that kind of person, which is, by the way, what I am.
Yeah.
That's just part of my alcoholism. Let me tell you something. You can get rid of the booze. You don't get rid of that, you'll never be happy. Because nobody will ever know who you are. You won't even be able to talk. Because you'll always run everything through your brain for what will this sound like, what will they think, why do they think, or what am I saying like. You can never be yourself, so nobody ever likes you for yourself, and you don't even feel good about yourself, and you always feel separated because you always know. He says, yeah, but if they really knew what I was thinking, unless you could tell them what you're thinking, you know what I mean? But if you can get past that stuff, you can talk fast. That's an old thing. You can talk faster at A meetings because you don't have to. What was I talking about? So in any event, the guy, the chemotherapy. So I don't want to give out the watered down stuff. And you know, there's a tendency. Whenever I have a meeting like this or whenever I get up, you know, people ask me, do you ever get nervous? I said, no, I really don't get nervous. I mean, I suppose once in a while I get nervous, but because I pray, you know, and I pray not to give the word down stuff, you know, not to, you know, just be myself, you know, and that's the deal. And you know, because I figure, you know, see, there's a blessing here. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave you. You know, part of the fear of people is being able to talk about yourself and express your ideas. And understand that there are probably going to be 25% of people that are always going to hate you and not like you, whatever it is, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean? That's okay, because the only thing I have to worry about is my relationship with him. Because you know, my big book says, right here it says, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has family back. It's just in so and some cases, well, it says, my recovery does not depend upon people. Depends upon my relationship with him. It says right here, it says, the minute we put our work in a service plan, the alcohol commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. And this is within the first 164 pages, I think. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife. We simply not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea. Burn the eye. People say, well, if you tell newcomers that, they'll run away. Run away to where? Like, where are they going? I said, you know, I want to be the excuse to send somebody out again, because the way I read the book says, it says we never argue about people, we suggest them drinking. At least that's what 12 and 12 says. Nowadays, we're so worried about people drinking. Some people need to drink. I mean, you can hate me for that. That's fine. Some people need to drink. You know what my sponsor said to me a long time ago? He says, never rob an alcoholic of his desperation. Never rob an alcoholic of his last drink. You know, if you want to use what I said in a meeting as an excuse, well, Russell said this and he pissed me off, so that's why, that's fine. That's okay with me. As long as they get, you know, some people need to, where are they running to? Maybe they have a shot of coming back here with a different attitude. Burn the idea in the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone, the only condition that he trusts in God and clean house. So let me read a couple of things, and then somewhere along the way we'll actually talk about the steps, although this has all been about the steps. But I guess beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. Here we go. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new page. Susan, page 13. My friend promised that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems, belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness and honesty and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things with the essential elements, which I think that means that they're like essential. They're absolute. It then goes on to say, let's go on to the next deal. We have found much of heaven, and we've been rocking into the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. Hey, they wouldn't have put that in there if it wasn't so. You know, they wouldn't have put that in there if it wasn't so. I mean, not drinking is great, but how about that rocket in the fourth dimension that found much of heaven stuff? How about that stuff that guy and he sold himself short was talking about? You know, I found the greatest thing. It's not about money. It's not about anything. It says my relationship with God is lifting me from the scrap heap. How about feeling, you know, it's great to have good things happen to yourself. How about feeling good about yourself when bad things are happening? How about feeling okay about yourself and where you're at, regardless of the circumstance in your life? Do you think that's possible? You think, I heard there was a guy in AA that, I heard that was actually accomplished by somebody in AA one time. I think I met a guy like that once. I wondered what he had. He seemed to be doing okay. I think it was Al Kennedy at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 4 months sober, and he was speaking. And I was 31 years old, and I wanted so much to be a man. I didn't know what it meant to be a man. I thought it had to do with getting laid or getting drunk or getting into fights, all of which I was bad at. You know what I mean? And and I, this guy, Al Kennedy, stood in front of me, and I knew, I suspected. You know when you're in the presence of a man. You know, you just know, you know, and because you're just looking at him, you say, I don't know what the man is, but I was like faking it until you make it, which is okay, Nate. You're allowed to fake it until you make it. The point is, though, eventually you're actually supposed to make it. But I mean, you don't want to be faking it until you die. But the bottom line is, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm looking at this Kennedy guy, and I'm saying, man, this guy's really something. You know, I've run into a few men like that. And, you know, like you really want to hang out with them, but they're scared to hang out with them. And, you know, you just trying to figure out what makes them work. And maybe if I hang out with them, like through osmosis, I can be like him or something like that. And you know, he was You could tell he was tough and courageous, but he wasn't mean or arrogant. He was kind, but he wasn't like sorry. He was just something else. He had what I guess Bill Dalton saw in Bill Wilson. He said something he thought a person ought to have. A release. You remember when he was sitting around his table, Bill Dotson, now Fox News Understate, he says, I was sitting there watching Bill Wilson, and he says, we were both sober, but he had a release. He had a something that I thought a person ought to have. And Al Kennedy left the room. He must have been about my age at that time. He left the room, and everybody clapped and applauded, and he was just helping people and loving on them and telling them the deal, you know, and this is what the deal is. And I said, man, that guy was great. And he says, my son said, yeah. And he says, no, he's really good. He says, and my son said, you know, he's dying of cancer. I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just spoke to me. He says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. I said, no, I'm talking about that guy, Al Kennedy. He's just something. He says, Russell, he's dying of cancer. He has 3 months to live. He said, he didn't say anything about dying of cancer. I'm sure I shared this before to me, but it's worth sharing. And I said, and you know, I'm the kind of guy, I'm an alcoholic. I have a hangnail. I have crap happen to me in my, what did it say, the wrongdoings of others, fancy to real or imaginary crap, can get me going for 16 weeks. I worry about your problems. You know what I mean? I'm talking about, here's a guy dying of cancer. You think I couldn't wrap my mind around that? But you know, it took me to a different level. I saw a man who was dying, and 3 months later he was dead, who was dying of cancer, and he was acting like it was okay, there was no problem, he wasn't scared, and he was helping other people, he was loving on them. You know, he became part of my we. Don't you have to have a we in order to do this thing? Doesn't it say in your book, maybe we have a different book, first time, it says, if you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready to take the steps unless you have a we. How can you take the steps unless you have a we? It's if you want what we have. Don't you have to have a we? Don't you have to have a group of people or a person or somebody? You're looking to say, man, if I can only have that deal. Why can't I be like that guy? Why can't I have that deal? You know? Like, you know, there's people that come in and they don't want what we have. Or they're not willing to go to any length. They're just not willing to give up Susie or give up the job or anything. They don't want it that badly. And I saw Al Kennedy and I would have done anything. You know, that was my whole struggle really through the first 10, 15 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do I want what Al Kennedy has? Or do I want the money? Do I want what Al Kennedy has? Or do I want the sex? Do I want what Al Kennedy has? Or do I want to be lazy? My whole struggle was between, do I want what these men have that I was hanging around and I wanted so much? Or do I want... Yeah, that was the struggle in AA. And I'm not saying I did everything perfect, but over a period of time, over the years, you know something? The Al Kennedys, the miners, I'll tell you about the miners in the next session. The miners won out. You know, that's the gold miners. I'll tell you about that. I'm not going to tell you about that now. Somebody remind me to talk about the miners in the next section. Another true story. If you understand about the miners, you'll understand about this whole deal. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, which we have not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. We've had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole life, attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives, which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. Going on. Page 62, Susan. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing. Now I'm just going to whip through the book and to get where I want to go. There's a pattern here, folks. This is the how and why of it. First of all, and I risk repeating myself, and I may repeat myself to make a point, because the point is real important. It's more important even than the war stories. You know why it's more important than the war stories? Because just like I said last time, if you look on page 29 of the book, where it talks about what we're supposed to talk about here, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given shown how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's the same part where it says, what we learned and felt and seen means anything at all. It means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of living Creator, with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms. So that's why I talk about this stuff, because I think it's important, and I don't believe, to be honest with you, that it's talked about a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. because people are scared to talk about it because they're scared to be judged and people will be mad at them and say, well, he's just a Bible thumper or a big book thumper, or they'll put him down or they'll laugh at him because it makes people nervous. And you know why it makes people nervous? Because if all this is true, and it is, then maybe they have to change. And even old timers don't like to change. They don't like to hear it. So if you don't hear it, and if you don't read it, and we don't talk about it, we can just talk about sex or relationships, romance relationships, or all that other stuff that really is unimportant and doesn't mean anything. And isn't even the answer. It's just a problem. And that's the reason why people aren't getting that much better, because they're just talking about the problem. They're not talking about the solution. No, but that's just my opinion, and I could be wrong. And the truth is, I could be wrong. You know, you're going to be the judge of that. You're going to go back to your groups and you're going to listen to a group where there's 30 people talking. You're going to see how many people mention the stuff I'm talking about and how many people talk about the problem. And then you're going to see what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to say, man, nobody's talking about this stuff. And then you're going to be saying to yourself, should I talk about it? And then you're going to say this, but what will they think about me? And then we're going to find out what the deal is about you. And then you get to discover, why am I so scared? And then you get to do a four-step. And then you get to do a fifth step. And then maybe you overcome that fear. And maybe then you really understand what they mean when they say a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, where you're in the world, but you're not of the world. And you can be yourself and you can talk about what you think is important. And you can be free. Instead of just saying you're free. Free of even the judgment of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you know they can't kick you out of here. You know, they can't kick you out of AA. You know, if you're drinking, they're not going to kick you out of AA. Nobody's going to kick you out of AA if you talk about God. The only thing that's going to happen is they're not going to like you. You know, if you can't handle people not liking you, I feel sorry for you. You know, that's what Dr. Bob said. He said in his story, he says, if you can't accept what we say here about God and the things we're talking about, he says, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He's the principal. So we are his agents. He's the father. We're his children. Most good ideas are simple. This is the triumphant arch. I want to get to the arch. Got about 5 minutes to go. I'm going to wrap this whole thing up. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Or not. You know. Perhaps there is a better way. Page 68. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him. Does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? Apparently he has something to do with this thing, whoever he is. I don't know who he is, but it seems to me that you ought to try to find out who that guy is. Because he's going to show you a lot of things. We never apologize. He said, I'd like to apologize to you for taking up your time talking about him. I'd like to do that. But you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know what fellowship you're in. I'm in a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. And my big book says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. And then again it says, we never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. You don't have to be scared of me. You don't have to be scared of this book. You know, I'd be scared of the fact that you may not be getting this deal. You know, believe me, I can't hurt you. I can't do anything to you. You know what would be the saddest thing in the world? To live your entire life? You know, because I don't think this is a dress rehearsal and get to the end of your life. Because I've been with people who died who had this deal. And I've been with them who died who didn't have this deal. You know, it would be sad to get to the end of your life and realize that you screwed the pooch, that you missed the whole deal. That you get to the end, you say, you know, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I, that you lived a life, you know, because I did that deal. Charging credit cards up, you know, buying things I couldn't afford, things I didn't need I couldn't afford to impress people I didn't even like, you know. To live a life not doing what you're doing because you're worried about what other people might think about you. Yeah, it's a bad, it's not even a life, you know. So here we go. So now we're in... Listen, so, you know, the fifth step, I'm going past the fifth step, but I want to point out something. The fifth step, this is into action. I read some of the things about relationships. This is into action. This is the fifth step now. Step six, five, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? This is the first paragraph. We have been trying to get a new attitude. Why do you think you do step five? It's all about God and the relationship. Did you know that? This is what it says. It says, we have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. We've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. Do you think it's possible to be 16 years in Alcoholics Anonymous? 17, 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous? Actually have, you know, sort of done the steps, you know, done that deal, and not have a relationship with God? Listen to me. It is. It is. And you know what it looks like? It's sad. Because there's no enthusiasm. You know what there is? There's a lot of bleeding deaconism. There's a lot of pissed off. There's a lot of gossip. There's a lot of character assassination, talking about around other people's backs. There's a lot of stuff, but there's no love. There's no love, and it's all intolerance. That's what it looks like. And Alcoholics Anonymous, and they got 20 years, so you can't tell them crap. You know. And then you go on to step 8 and 9, you know? And you know what you think step 8 and 9 is about making amends to people and be nice to people so you have good relationship with people so you feel good? That's not what it's about at all. See, that's earthly, you think that's what it's about. You know what it says in 8? It says on page 77, Susan? It says, at the moment, this is about 8 and 9. This is what 8 and 9 is about. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Making up with people, having them forgive us, having you forgive them, all of a sudden it's not an end. It says it's our real purpose. What do you think the real purpose is in the book? I'm just talking about the book Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, people come up to me and say, hey, listen, you're pissed at me. I get a lot of praise for reading stuff out of the book. People get mad at me. He says, I don't like you. He says, what don't you like? He says, well, the stuff you're saying. You mean the stuff I'm reading from the book? He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it. You like, it's like the way you read. You mean like it's important? He says, yeah, you know, like you put a lot of emphasis on it and stuff, you know. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves. Listen, our real purpose, the reason we do this, to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. It's all about Him. It's all about serving Him. Over 2,000 years ago, in the book of Matthew, I don't know about you guys, when I was growing up in AA, you know how I learned about the book of Matthew? My sponsor handed me Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. It's not conference approved, but you want somebody that ain't conference disapproved either. Nobody in any conference has disapproved the Bible. I haven't heard anybody in AA say, you cannot read the Bible. And you ain't never going to hear anybody say that, because most of the old-timers who got their shit together are reading it. And Bill Wilson was reading it, and that's why his real sponsors were Sam Shoemaker, who was Episcopal priest, and Ed Dowling, you know, Jesuit. It's all over this deal. Unless you don't want to see it, but, you know, alcoholics are pretty much blind. So then they see what they want to see. So there we have. So I'm going to end up now with this deal. Well, that's because you think everybody's welcome in AA. You like everybody. Of course, that's not what AA says. It's not. It's not. I know it's not. It says somewhere in the book. It says right here. See, this is where I like saying this stuff just to piss people off. You know, listen, it may not even be true, but I don't know. No one is too discredited or sunk too low to be welcomed cordially. If he means business. Why did they put that in there? I don't know. I'm just reading from the book, you know. Don't blame me. I didn't write this stuff. That's on page 161. You got Ray back there. He does the archives. He knows I'm not lying about this stuff. It's in there. Well, it's in that part of the book. It's in the part of the book that nobody ever reads. You know, the fellowship, if you ask the fellowship, is everybody welcome? They'll say, yeah, it doesn't matter. Do your own thing. Say whatever you want to say. It's your program, my program, and chicken on whatever the heck it is, you know? You'll be an atheist today. It's okay. AA takes a stand. Did you know AA takes a stand on atheism? Listen, you're not going to kick anybody else out because they're an atheist. They can say whatever they want. But trust me, the big book takes a stand. God either is or he isn't. What was our decision to be? We could not duck this. It takes a stand. It really does. Trust me, this book has taken us. It's not a middle of the road. There is no middle of the road solution. You know? It's not that AA doesn't take a stand. It's just that the book is wonderful. the book is led up down by the fellowship that all has clay feet and are scared to talk about the book. See, the people are scared to talk about the book. The book is fine. The book, the solution is in the book. It's we're the ones who let it down. We're the ones to give out the watered down chemotherapy because we don't want people talking about us behind their back. Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. There he is again. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. There he is. Great events will come to pass for you and God. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of your fine and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. Look, this is just my opinion. Anybody can become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. All you need is a desire to stop drinking. There is a difference between becoming a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and becoming part of the fellowship of the Spirit. It's a little bit different. You know, there's a separation that goes on in AA. And I'm actually going to talk about this next time. That's in step 6 and 7. We'll sort of cover it. I'll mush it into 10 through 12. You know, it says that's the step that separates the men from the boy. There's a separation that goes on during this deal. Thank you very much. So...